Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This show is brought to you by Sledge & Company Financial, LLC. I'm Taylor Sledge, founder and CEO. At Sledge & Company, we help businesses and families do better with their money. Check us out on the web at sledgecompany.com. That's sledgecompany.com.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
And join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Rhino.
Howdy, howdy.
Happy post-Thanksgiving and welcome December. Wow, it's just really something with Thanksgiving falling in the last week of the month of November. Man. That's really something, because now it's like a race to Christmas, it feels like, doesn't it? We are here. I trust that your Thanksgiving holiday was a good one.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of a quick run-up, eat something, hang out for a bit, turn back around, get back down here in time for work. But, yeah, it was enjoyable. Spent some time with the family.
Good.
Ate a bit too much. Brought some yums back with me that I'll be munching on, and we'll likely have to bring up here to the studio to share, because I can't eat that much.
Well, we're certainly blessed. There's no doubt about that. And, of course, Thanksgiving is a time to reflect upon those many blessings and be grateful for those. No doubt about it. Now, I'm going to send you something. I meant to do this over the weekend, and I failed to do so. But I'm going to send it to you now, if it's okay. And I've sort of set it up for the folks. This is a Thanksgiving message from a show that many people maybe have never heard of. It's Father Knows Best. Remember that show? It was from the 50s. And that's a long time ago. Don't even think about television being around in that period of time. But it was a Thanksgiving message that aired as part of the show. And you got it now, right? And so here it is. I just want you to hear this, folks.
Betty gets a plate. Kathy, you sit there. Bud, pull up a chair. Now, get this one for Mommy.
There's nothing like hamburgers for Thanksgiving.
Oh, I'm starving.
So am I.
You know something? This is the happiest, unhappy Thanksgiving I've ever spent. I feel I'd like to say thanks in a rather special way. Oh, Lord, we give thee thanks from the depths of our humble hearts for all the blessings thou hast seen fit to bestow upon us. We thank thee for the food which graces our table, the roof which covers our head. We thank thee for the privilege of living as free men in a country which respects our freedom and our personal rights to worship and think and speak as we choose. We thank thee for making us a family, for giving us sincerity and understanding. But most of all, dear Lord, we thank thee for giving us the greatest gift a family may know, the gift of love for one another. Amen.
I'm not sure I've heard a better giving of thanks so perfectly articulated by Robert Young, of course, the actor who played the father on Father Knows Best. That's 1954. That's incredible. So I don't know how I came across this, Rhino, but I did, and I said, oh, we got to play that. I don't think I've ever seen it or heard it. And I've certainly watched the reruns of the program. It's just good old-fashioned, wholesome 1950s television, if you will, and television was still burgeoning. It was brand new.
Yeah, that was from the eighth episode of the first season of Father Knows Best.
Okay, so I didn't realize the first season. But immediately what came to mind, would you do that today? Would such a scene be aired today? Would any of the producers of primetime television, because that was primetime television back then, of course, would any producers of just normal primetime television, would they allow that? Would they include that, incorporate that in a production?
Well, maybe it's a bad example because I think it just got canceled, but I think you get away with it on Blue Bloods.
Okay.
That Tom Selleck show with the Wahlberg brothers and all that.
But you know what I'm saying, that we've certainly drifted away from that. And even if you did something like that, you know you'd have folks just outraged about it, right?
Yeah,
where's the diversity and all that kind of crap?
You've got people that have the red rear over episodes of Friends that are 30 years old.
That's true. I just thought that was really good. I mean, to include gratitude about living in a free nation and having those freedoms and love for family. And here depicted, of course, is what we would likely describe as a more legacy traditional family. That doesn't mean you can't have other families and compositions of families. But that one at least depicted represents what we commonly think of as a mainstream family. And I don't know, it just seems like in the last few years, I guess, that has been to some extent demonized. We've seen all these racial scam artists even say, well, that's representative of white supremacy and European colonialism. Right. Right? Like, what? So what's the problem with that? What's the problem with that? I don't know. That just kind of stuck in my head after seeing that on Thursday on Thanksgiving.
The problem is liberals cannot get out of their feelings long enough to exist and live in reality. So instead of existing and living in the real world like the rest of us, they spend their time getting in their feelings and crying about things that happened hundreds of years ago and didn't happen to them, probably didn't even happen to anybody related to them, but, oh my God, the humanity. I have to be emotional about this, and you're a horrible human being for not being emotional about this. Why are you not outraged? That's their life, day in, day out. That's how miserable they are.
And I think there's a lot of truth to that. But I start thinking, is there resentment? Is there jealousy? Because what you clearly see here is these people are happy. They're happy with their simple life, but one where they got food on the table. They enjoy the bounty of freedom that our country provides. An opportunity and love for one another within their family. I mean, that's the thing that Father there says, that's the greatest gift of all to be thankful for. Man, am I being just old-fashioned here?
No, it's just that the vast majority of people that vote Democrat are the people that never got out of that rebellious teenager phase.
I guess so. That's sad.
Yeah, it really is.
Well,
and if they weren't so belligerently ignorant, I would have pity for them. But they like to stick it in your face, so I like to shove it right back at them with the same attitude and the same demeanor.
And that's the problem, is it not? Is that I don't want to stick this in anybody's face, and I hope that in playing this on the program,
I fight fire with fire. We're okay. Different people.
Well, and I'm not suggesting, hey, you got to see things my way or anything like that. I'm just sharing something that you frankly is fairly rare today, which is just a family. And you can't see it, folks, but Rhino, you saw it, that that his son, I believe, initiates extending his hand to father, to Robert Young there, and then they all join hands around the table, and they're praying. Gosh, it's like some people would just freak out over that. Oh, the humanity, right? You can't do that. You don't have this and that and this and that. Well, I submit that Americans said enough on November 5th, that I think most people in our country would see that and say, yeah, those are the sorts of values and the nuclear family which made the country great. It's got us to where we are today. And we're somewhat unique in that regard. But just to see this family sit around the table on Thanksgiving and offer up that prayer with the food all laid out as they're about to dig in, I don't know. That struck me. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Well, it is Monday. It's a short show today. Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors at 12:05. But we got Dr. Jennifer Bryan joining us at 11:05 to discuss food insecurity in the state of Mississippi. We're coming right back with more. Lots of news to catch you up on as well in the Element Well Studio.
Here's John and Corey.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school. Welcome back, everyone. It is middays. We are live in the Element Well studio. It's the Monday after Thanksgiving. And our first show in the month of December. We're winding down the old year here. Man, it's hard to believe. The markets, the Dow down 130. The funny money also down a little bit. Never crossed that $100,000 line.
Couldn't quite punch through.
Still working on it. The NASDAQ enjoying a pretty good day, up 166. Crude oil down to $68 a barrel. The average price, by the way, of regular in this country, sitting at $3.04. So it's headed to the two-handle territory, perhaps. Lots of travel over the weekend. Busiest in our history. Black Friday spending a bit muted this year based on last year. Bargain-hungry Americans skipped the stores and turned to their electronic devices to do their shopping. Brick-and-mortar sales grew 0.7% year over year. That's according to payments processor MasterCard. And e-commerce sales increased rather heftily. Up 14.6% year over year.
Because consumers like guarantees.
Oh, what's that? What do you mean?
The mother's milk of Black Friday sales in brick-and-mortar stores are the lost leaders that they're losing their shirt on to get you through the door for that Black Friday sale. It's the 70-inch TV that costs the same amount as a bag of apples, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The only problem is, and in the very fine print on the print ad, it will say, limit one per store. So everybody shows up wanting to get that one great deal on that one TV that is only one of them in the store. So inevitably, some people leave unhappy. Whereas on these Cyber Monday online e-commerce deals, you don't get quite the same level of deal. But you do still get the deal because they want you to use their e-commerce system. They want you to shop through them and buy it from them. So you still get a pretty good deal, and it's guaranteed at that price. and you're guaranteed to get one. It may not be by Christmas, but you're guaranteed to get one at that price without wasting a trip and fighting the crowd.
Of course, at that point, they've got your contact information, and you will be bombarded with electronic communication promoting.
There's a give and a take in here.
That's exactly right. That's what makes it work, though. So, but, you know, overall, sales fairly brisk, which I think is a bit surprising given the economic situation. But it's mainly because people are working. When folks are employed, they figure out a way to buy stuff. And people are working, unemployment relatively low. Yes, inflation has certainly eaten away at the pocketbooks, but it has moderated over the last year. And while wages have ticked up, barely above since Joe Biden's been in office, now barely crossing the line where wages overall during that 3 3/4 of a year period up above inflation. Now, of course, you could make all sorts of cases that would refute that depending on your personal situation, what you're buying. But just overall, when you look at it, that's kind of where we are. That is, however, a far cry from the nearly $6,000 in improvement in real wages experienced during the 2016 to 2020 Trump era. And I think a lot of folks are hoping that there is a return to that, where inflation stays cool, but wages continue to increase, giving people more buying power. I haven't really seen any reports yet about kind of what's in vogue and what's not, and any trends towards certain goods based on folks' personal financial situation. You know, are they maybe spending the same amount of money but selecting lower cost, less luxury oriented items, if you will? Haven't seen anything on that. At this point, we'll start to get more reports from all the various sources that track that sort of stuff. And then it was kind of a quiet weekend, was it not, Rhino, until the bomb dropped yesterday?
Well, it depends on which direction you were looking.
I mean, that's true.
If you were looking at the college football gridiron, there were 22 different teams that decided it was time for fisticuffs.
Man, can you believe that? That's just crazy. That Ohio
State. Like every time I turned around, it was a different team fighting a different team over somebody planting a flag or a trident or a stick.
The Michigan Ohio State. Wow, in the horseshoe.
Some of those guys got maced.
Yeah, by security.
Police.
Yeah, police.
Trying to break them up.
Okay.
The police made a line. They didn't respect the line. They got maced.
Yeah, that's true. But the big news that broke, of course, was President Joe Biden issuing a full and unconditional pardon of his son, Hunter. Now that, of course, after having told us...
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
I mean, you could do an hour-long montage of all the times when he said, no, I'm not going to pardon my son, and then throw about 8,000 times Clarine Jean-Pierre said it. And really, you could make a show out of that. But then all of a sudden yesterday, he sort of went against what he had promised, and he issued this full and unconditional pardon, not only right for crimes of which he's previously been, I guess, indicted on, but future.
He's convicted.
And convicted,
he's
right.
He's awaiting sentencing.
That's right. But even future crimes, or if there is some sort of proceeding that occurs where he is convicted of a crime after the date that this pardon goes into effect, he's pardoned from that. So
it's not really all that unusual. What's unusual is the time frame with which he set aside the pardon to include time when Hunter was supposedly doing some shady dealings for now president, then Vice President Biden.
Yeah. He says
basically the timetable just takes away any use of evidence that would have been found on Hunter Biden's laptop.
I agree and believe that what is most aggravating, however, to me is the fact that he said he would. Not that we should believe him because he's a prolific liar. He has a legacy of lying going back to law school, right? He says the charges in his cases came about only after several of my political opponents in Congress instigated them to attack me and oppose my election. You know, he says, no reasonable person who looks at the facts of Hunter's cases can reach any other conclusion than Hunter was singled out only because he is my son, and that is wrong. This guy doesn't get it. It's got nothing to do with the fact that he's your son. It's got to do more with the fact that you were the vice president when these alleged crimes were committed by your son, big guy. That's what he's missing out. You were the vice president of the United States. And he goes on to, you know, defend his son and talk about what a kind and human he is and how he's cleaned his life up in the last 5.5 years. And that's all fine. And certainly you can understand.
Except he hasn't.
Right. That's debatable.
There's video evidence of him high as a kite. And he's also, in the last 5 years, left somebody high and dry out in California for $300,000 worth of rent and tried to pay the guy with a painting made of Hunter Biden's own feces.
Joe, of course, is
not exactly a nice guy there, Joe.
Oblivious and delusional is certainly one way to put it. I actually think this is going to play into the Republicans' hands in a positive way. In getting these nominations through and just other aspects of their agenda.
It puts the Democrats' gun law ideology on ice for at least a generation.
That's the big thing.
The Democrats cannot come out and thump their chest about, we need more gun laws. Well, guess what? Your president just pardoned his son for breaking gun laws.
Exactly right. And it's incredibly hypocritical. But there's going to be a lot of talk about lawfare and the use of that against Trump all throughout this time. I mean, there were some people in some circles that said if Biden didn't pardon Hunter, then maybe when President Trump was inaugurated, he would. I don't know if that was on the table or not.
Considering Trump was impeached for trying to investigate the dirt that Biden has now pardoned his son for.
Yeah. But this is going to figure in, I believe, the debate. In the halls of Congress, I really think you're going to see more about this. But just the going against what he previously committed is reprehensible in my view. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio. Stay with us.
Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Welcome back, everyone. It is middays. We're back in the Element Well studio. We thank you so much for joining us. Chris from Oxford says they have showed their true colors, and obviously people were fed up with it, but do you think it keeps going, or do you think they rebound? I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about. I'm reading your message there above that, Chris, that do you think the Democrat Party has done enough damage this past presidency nearly that they can get down to a third of the Democrats in the House and Senate come next cycle? I don't know if it'll be that low, but I think they're scared to death. Well, I think they're any party, of course, when they lose, they're going to do serious soul searching and introspection. If they have any sense, they do that to try to figure out what went wrong and what pivots need to be made, if any. Here's what I think, Chris. I think you've got some that are clear-eyed and have been, I guess, preaching to the party. We got to make some changes here, and we got to start shifting away from this identity politics horse that we tried to ride into this election. James Carville has been an extremely frequent, outspoken critic of his own party. I don't know if you saw a little video he did, and he does this a lot, and then he shares it on social media, but he said the party and the campaign in particular was paying too much attention and giving too much credit and deference to young 20-something-year-olds that were telling them, don't go on Joe Rogan, for example. And he said, you know, honestly, people that age, sure, their input is welcome. And I'm being very, very generous in my description of what he said.
He's usually a little more colorful.
He was, and he used some words we can't say on the air here. But he said, I don't even want to know their name. They just need to sit down, shut up, and take notes. And they should not be the primary advisors in a campaign. And I think he's right. But he said they let them be, and they heeded their advice, and it cost them. That's what Carville says. But there's others. I mean, we've talked about Scott Jennings over at CNN, Stephanie Ruhle at MSNBC. And they're pushing back on those in the party that are saying, no, we got to continue with this narrative, with this approach, with this strategy. And this was all because Trump supporters are just racist and misogynist and transphobic and xenophobic and all that other stuff that, frankly, that's what got your butt beat.
One of the funniest reactions I've seen after the election was that the left needs to get their own Joe Rogan. There's just one problem with that concept. The left had their own Joe Rogan. His name was Joe Rogan.
Exactly.
Joe Rogan was a Bernie bro.
Yeah, they alienated him with their nonsense. And he essentially crossed over. And I think the other thing is, if you sort of, let's look at the philosophies, political philosophy. Draw a line right in the middle of a line, right? A horizontal line. Draw a vertical line. Everything to the left is the left, and the right's the right. The problem with the left is, where that center point is, everything from that point to the right, they consider extreme, radical. Right? And everything just
because they've spent
left.
The last 30, 40 years moving at an increasing rate of speed to the left.
That's exactly right. They've lurched so far to the left that now they consider the fringes of the left, as far as you can get out there, oh, that's just normal. And no, it's not. And they, I think, refuse to acknowledge that, and that's what's got them in trouble. But I will remind folks that things have a way of moving back and forth in our politics. And so don't know if you've been tracking the U.S. House, where it looks like it's going to land. There's only one seat, by the way, that hasn't been finalized, hasn't been called. One out of 435. It's in California. It's trending greatly in favor of Democrat. And right now, the current tally is 220 Republicans, 214 Democrats. We're going to end up with 220 and 215, a 5-seat majority. That ain't squat. Now, think about this. We're all anxious for Donald Trump to be inaugurated, to take over the White House. We want to see the House and Senate be seated, go into session, start pushing his agenda through. But over in the House, it's not only is it going to sit, when all said and done, at 220 to 215, three Republicans are going to work in the Trump administration, vacating those seats. That puts it at 217 to 215, meaning any legislation that Speaker of the House Mike Johnson puts on the floor can only lose. It loses one vote, and it's a tie, which means it doesn't pass until such time as those three Republican seats, which are vacated to go work in the administration, are filled. And I would expect them to be replaced by Republicans in those three districts. It's Mike Walls and Matt Gaetz in Florida and Elise Stefanik in New York. Safe districts. These are 65-70% Republican districts. So I don't expect that we'll see Democrats rise to the occasion and be elected in those particular House seats. But the point is, until we have those special elections, it's 217 to 215. Lose one vote of Republicans of any legislation, it doesn't pass. In other words, you can't lose any. You got to have them all to pass legislation. And you think, well, that shouldn't be a problem. Here's why it is. Because you know there are Republicans who won by slim margins in districts that went for Biden or where a Democrat held the seat for the last 2 years. And they're, of course, always thinking about the next election cycle and how their votes may affect their prospects of being reelected in 26. And so I saw Michael Guest, by the way, over the weekend, and I was asking him about it, and he just said, you know, Mike Johnson's aware. He knows it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a challenge. And here's what will happen. Stuff won't get passed, potentially, and people are going to freak out. Those dang rhinos, all that stuff. You'll hear the cries. And then even in the Senate, where you've got a 53-47, don't forget, two of those Republican senators are fairly moderate, if not left, and that's Susan Collins in Maine and Lisa Murkowski in Alaska, who frequently peel off from Republicans on matters, including...
I mean, didn't they vote in the last week or two to confirm some of Biden's appointees?
They did. They did.
Appointments.
And Susan Collins was a tough one to get through. Was it Kavanaugh? I think the Supreme Court. Remember, she was the vote that fell in favor. She finally said, okay, I'm satisfied. And it broke the logjam in the Senate. They got Kavanaugh ultimately confirmed to the Supreme Court. The only point I'm making is those two are subject to going in a different direction. You'd say, well, that might affect their political future. It actually won't. It could help them because they're in states where you can do that and still get elected again, reelected. They've proven that already.
That's when you need strong leadership to not let the tail wag the dog.
Agree. But in the Senate, you know that's extremely difficult. Senators are very independent. They got 6-year terms. They're in a body where they're one of 100, and their vote is a lot more powerful. So I think what would be in the best interest of getting the agenda through is Mr. Trump himself having conversations directly. And it's not unusual, you know that, Rhino, for a president to have a one-on-one private conversation, either on the phone or even in the Oval Office with members of the House, but in particular members of the Senate, especially on appointments, because that's so critical.
I mean, that's how him and Byron Donalds got to be so good friends.
That's true.
Byron Donalds showed up and said, I've got an idea for prison reform, and Trump goes, hey, it's a good idea.
That's exactly right. The representative from Florida. Yeah, so, folks, we're stepping aside for a break. The final segment of Hour 1 is up next, and then it's Dr. Jennifer Bryan with the Mississippi State Medical Association. Stay with us. back, everyone. It's Middays. Sorry, Joe. Just like you, Epstein checked out years ago. He requests his presence at the press conference. Biden pardons Jeffrey Epstein. That is a meme someone sent us. What about Syria, says Rhett in Ridgeland. I read that Iraq is sending militias to reinforce the Syrian government. That seems contrary to U.S. support of the rebels. I guess we have no influence left in Iraq. Yeah, there's some fireworks going on, I guess is one way to put it, over in the region with respect to Syria. I mean, it's just a constant powder keg, and you never know what's going to pop up over there. They just seem to be obsessed with blowing each other up, honestly. Don't really know. Talking about Black Friday, notice credit card debt is at an all-time high. Yeah, it is, and not really surprised at that. However, I will say that there was lots of dire predictions about credit card debt and also debt on commercial real estate and refinancing of lots of corporate debt that were just going to cause major problems in the banking industry and in the economy in general. That time has passed, and it really didn't have any major noticeable impact. And I think the same is true with respect to credit card debt. Certainly, the cost of that debt has increased because interest rates are up. And that could put pressure on household spending. And I think most people thought it would happen. But apparently, people have some runway, some outstanding available credit on their cards, and they used them. Now, it could be that just inflation in general, the cost of stuff is greater. And that is a factor in the record credit card debt that we're seeing right now. The 10-year, by the way, and the 2-year are right next to each other in terms of yields. I think the 2 was 4.22 in the 10, 4.23. Again, I think most folks would like to see mortgage rates in the 5% range, and that would require, as opposed to the mid-6s, which is presently what's available, that would require another point being shaved off the 10-year to get it down in the low 3% range for that sort of reaction. Whether or not that is in the offing is hard to tell because the readings on inflation are a bit confusing. We had Jeremy Nelson with Element Wealth in last week talking about that. The Fed is trying to figure all that out, some conflicting information coming in on that. And so there are a lot of analysts now that expect they may sit tight in their December meeting with respect to interest rates, but might see them come down a quarter point or so in January. That's kind of what the expectation is. At this point, the sales from a financial performance perspective, NVIDIA, all the big tech guys are all doing pretty fantastic. So the demand for artificial intelligence, the investment in that, expected to be upwards of $2 trillion invested in new data center projects by the big data center operators over the next 3 years. I've been spending some time, Rhino, watching interviews with NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang. I mean, it's fascinating, really, his view of the world, and in particular, the technology sector and where all this stuff is going. But you're familiar with the new Blackwell chip, the most powerful and largest physically single processing chip ever manufactured. Get this. He said 208 billion transistors on that wafer. That's incredible. Said they literally had to invent new technology just to design and produce the physical chip. He said that the new technology, his words, almost defies the laws of physics. When you think about 208 billion transistors embedded, and he holds it in his hand. You know, he's doing an interview, and he's holding this thing in his hand, and it's what, maybe 5-6 inches square or so? It's about the size it looks like. He says that it's capable of doing the processing equivalent to, and I'm quoting him, thousands of general-purpose computers. Thousands! That's mind-boggling. This is human innovation at its best. And he's so passionate and so positive and so optimistic about it, and I'm with him. And this is just fantastic. He also makes some statements about the future of software development, coding, programming in general. Says, you know, all you folks are hip on making sure your kids learn how to code. Computers are going to code. Your kids need to understand how to instruct the computers to produce the code. It's time for Fox News and Super Talk News. Dr. Jennifer Bryan is next.
Your host, Journal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher. Get ready.
Get ready
to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state.
Hello.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. We're live in the Element Well studio. We thank you so much for joining us. It's Monday. It's a short show, but we have Dr. Jennifer Bryan with the Mississippi State Medical Association in the Element Well studios. Thanks for coming in, Dr. Bryan. Good to see you again.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
We wanted to talk to you about food insecurity in the state of Mississippi. It's kind of hard to believe that right. In this day and age, we still have this problem here in our state and in our country.
Absolutely.
Honestly, and I think perhaps the situation in Mississippi is the most pronounced, but what are you guys doing to help out with this problem?
So first, we want to thank SuperTalk. You guys have been great partners in recognizing the need in our state. And also, this stemmed from some conversations that we've had over the past couple of years with the Ag Commissioner, Andy Gibson, and he really had his finger on the pulse of rural areas and their struggles. And through our House of Delegates, there came a resolution that we passed about, you know, meeting the need of our population. I thought I'd start with a couple of statistics. The CDC reports that food security in Mississippi leads to 49.9% of adults not consuming fruit and 30.6% of Mississippi adults consuming vegetables less than once a day. And also, you know, our poverty rate, that's 28.6% in the Delta, 20% overall in our state, where it's 13% nationally. So food insecurity here, we're number one in the country. And the statistics, you know, even magnify with our elderly population and their access to food. So to some who hear this, it may be shocking that 1 in 6 in Mississippians, or about 480,000 people, don't have enough to eat, but it's the truth.
Man, that's really incredible.
You guys, Atmos Energy, Ergon, and the Mississippi Food Network have partnered with the physicians of the state on meeting this need during the holiday season, and we so appreciate our partners.
Wow. Well, I think, honestly, it's incumbent upon all of us, including the private sector, and this great company, of course, recognizes that and comes to the call to help our fellow Mississippians with this issue. Nobody out there should be struggling for food.
No. In fact, 1 in 8 of seniors are experiencing, you know, food shortfalls and access to food. So We got together with the stakeholders, and like I said, Ergon and Atmos, SuperTalk, Mississippi Food Network, and really created this drive, and you'll be hearing more about it on the radio. Thank you for that, leading up to December the 13th. That's right, and we're going to be live from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the Kroger on I-55 North. And we also have a landing page, which I believe will be posted on your website, ours, and our other partners, where you can donate. So you can come by that day and bring non-perishable food items. You can also go to the site and make donations. With our corporate sponsors, right now, we're matching up to $10,000 every dollar that is donated. And it's through the Food Network and their expertise, I'm told that $10 can feed 60 people.
Wow.
So it's really an amazing impact that we can make here.
Dr. Brian, is this something that you may note as just part of your regular practice responsibilities, where you'll see patients that you can tell have some sort of deficiency here?
Absolutely. We see in our state, it's access to healthy foods that's really the problem.
Okay.
Because we know that eating healthier is more expensive, and it leads to the medical problems that we see in our state: hypertension, heart disease, diabetes. But it is quite often that we'll see people that don't have enough to eat, and they're, you know, relying on the support of the community or the church or nonprofits. And in our rural areas, that access even gets harder. It may be economic, it may be access to healthy food options or grocery stores in their region. But, you know, we can't fix every problem every day, but the holidays are a wonderful time where we can support families in need. And, of course, the non-perishables will support them through the holidays. So
yeah.
We just, it does contribute to our overall health. But, again, we don't think about it on a day-to-day basis, or at least I don't, and I should. But access to food across our state, particularly healthy food, is a real problem, and it's leading to adverse health outcomes. So we're hoping to get to the 20,000 mark. You know, we've got up to $10,000. We're going to match every dollar, and the Mississippians that can be fed as a result of this, it will be impactful across the state.
With respect to just adopting a healthy diet, I wonder how much is just a function of people not knowing, honestly, that much of our population doesn't realize the correlation and the connection between what you eat and disease.
Oh, absolutely. And we're seeing that. People begin to focus more on wellness. That's some of the benefits, I guess, of technology and access to media. But still, there is a lot of just general health literacy that we could do better on. And I find myself talking to people about the colors of the vegetables and fruit that you eat, you know, and to mix things up and the quality of the food. But again, those asks are expensive, and so we want to kind of put our money where our mouths are, and we want the state to do better. We want the state to be healthier, and our doctors see a need. Food is medicine. We're seeing that across the country as kind of an ongoing theme, that food is medicine, and healthy nutrition can improve our health outcomes.
Yeah, it's incredible. What about the so-called food deserts? You hear a lot of talk about that. I know the American Heart Association, for example, has done a lot of detailed, comprehensive studies on that, where they'll show that, you know, a person that lives in adjacent zip codes, at one zip code, you've got just a terrible occurrence of heart disease just because of the proximity of healthy food next to the other zip code where there is more availability.
That's the truth, and some of our problems are cultural. I mean, we've just had Thanksgiving, and I'm sure that you and I both had some things that we probably shouldn't have over the holiday. But we do need a paradigm shift in how we eat, and then access. It's not unlike our access to healthcare issue, where we want to continue to spotlight our rural communities and really encourage businesses to think of ways to reach their, you know. Getting in a car is a luxury for some people, to drive across to the other county and get food. So there are wonderful programs. Again, a shout out to the Mississippi Food Network. I think they cover 30 counties, and they really do a very good job in this space. But we can do more, and we want to support them and their worthy work. So if there are listeners that are listening, please consider going to the SuperTalk website, and they'll have the link set up, and give what you can. This goes across the state to meet the needs of many hungry Mississippians.
Is there a message here for the legislature, for our lawmakers, Dr. Brian? You know I got to ask you that.
Well, I would say that food is medicine, and we know that it will improve outcomes. So certainly we want to look at incentivizing opportunities for access to healthy foods and also access to health care in these communities. It is a problem. It's statewide. We certainly have pockets that are better served than others. I don't know the overall fix to this, but we do see a problem. And I think the first way to tackle a problem is to raise the flag. And food insecurity, maybe we don't have, we think of a light switch, right? So these people have food, these people don't. It's not that. They're insecure about what will they eat next week. What will they eat? What will they send with their children to school tomorrow? Or will they have a turkey at Christmas? All of those things that some people take for granted. Many people don't know what's coming down the pipe next week.
Yeah.
It's a tough problem, but it's one that is so important, and it's everybody should have access to food, right?
Yeah.
You and I were talking about that before the break, that we just can't fathom that problem and the magnitude that it is to be number one in the country.
If an individual or companies want to get involved, want to help out, how do they do that?
So thank you for that. We will be happy to update our graphics to include any corporate sponsors that want to jump on board with us with matching dollars. That definitely, using your corporate footprint to put the website on your company site, to direct people there, to ask your employees to give. It's such a worthy statewide campaign. We can always use more corporate sponsors. And then in individuals, you know, every dollar counts.
Yeah.
Come out and see us on the Radiothon that we're doing on the 13th. We'd love to have you. If you've got a story that you want to tell, we want to hear from you, you know, about that this impacts real people. I think we can all think about our families and friends, and there's somebody that falls into this category where you wonder how they get by, and that's who this is for.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, I think it's really good to engage the private sector and just private citizens, because I think there are a lot of people that want to help. They just don't know the best way to do that.
Well, we would just urge you to join with the Physicians of Mississippi as we meet the need during this holiday season. And again, I want to thank all of our partners, especially SuperTalk, for allowing us to put this message out.
Got it. Dr. Jennifer Bryan with the Mississippi State Medical Association has been our guest, talking about food insecurity and how you can help. Tell them one more time how they do that.
All right. Well, you can go to the Mississippi State Medical Association website, or you can go to the SuperTalk website. Ergon and Atmos will likely have it up on there soon. And please donate and come out and see us on December 13th.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, Dr. Bryan. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Folks, we're stepping aside for a break. Coming right back in the Element Wealth studio.
Is everything that's growing green.
Callaway's is the most complete Christmas store around. Stop by and take advantage of our Black Friday special. We have a large selection of permanent Christmas trees, wreaths, and garlands, all 20% off and more, along with our Christmas ribbons, angels, Santas, water lanterns, and ornaments, all 20% off. Callaway's has a large selection of poinsettias, along with fresh-cut Christmas trees, fresh Christmas wreaths, and garlands. This is Brent Callaway. Since 1954, Callaway's has been family-owned and operated. Callaway's has a large selection of your favorite trees, shrubs, and color plants. Don't forget to stop by and visit Callaway's Christmas store, and be sure to take advantage of our Black Friday specials. All permanent Christmas trees, wreaths, and garlands, 20% off and more, along with our Christmas ribbons, angels, Santas, water lanterns, and ornaments, all 20% off. Callaway's Christmas is a family tradition. Callaway's Glutstadt on Calhoun Station Parkway, south of Germantown High.
Rogers Dabb Chevrolet is Mississippi's largest General Motors business elite dealer. We make it easy to maintain your fleet with over 100 work-ready vehicles available for your job site. Diesel, gas, trucks, vans, and service bodies. And we build to your business specifications. It really is easier with Rogers Dabb's fleet. Call the Rogers Dabb's Business Elite Fleet Team today at 866-671-4226 or visit us online at rogersdabbs.com. Rogers Dabb Chevrolet. Find new roads.
Be sure and check out the newly remodeled Basil's in Fondren, where you get simple food done well. And don't forget to drop by Basil's Fountain View at the Renaissance. Go to eatbasils.com for online ordering for both locations. That's Basil's.
In 1920, John Allbritton Sr. opened Allbritton's Jewelry in downtown Jackson. With an expertise in watchmaking from his time with the Illinois Central Railroad, John not only sold but serviced pocket and dress watches for his fellow Mississippians. Allbritton's has maintained that tradition to this day, with two full-time watchmakers on staff that are capable of repairing all major watch brands. Allbritton's also offers a vast collection of fine watches built to fit any lifestyle, from dress styles in gold and stainless steel to sporty selections in carbon fiber. Allbritton's has the watch for you. Come see why, since 1920, the people of Mississippi have chosen Allbritton's as their fine watch store.
Quality and value go hand in hand at Allbritton's, Allbritton's Jewelers.
Hey, this is Bob, and if you're like me, you like dealing with local people. Majestic Metals was founded in Mississippi in 1954 and are headquartered right in Gluckstadt. For complete metal building systems and steel roofing and siding, call the hometown folks. Majestic Metals, 800-647-8540 or online at majesticmetalsinc.com.
To all the folks in the Capital City metro area, love to have you join me tomorrow morning, 6 till 9, Gallo Show. We'll start your day the informed way. Super Talk Mississippi, 97.3.
Mississippi.
Let's go.
We are back in the Element Well studio. So, in addition to Joe Biden pardoning his son Hunter, who, let's be honest, is just a crook, not a good person, President-elect Trump has tapped Cash Patel to lead the FBI. One of the first things he said, which I thought was great, was that he doesn't want the FBI, the management administration, the leaders of the organization, and a lot of the rank and file as well, doesn't want them concentrated in the Hoover building there in the Beltway. Wants to disperse them out. Wants to turn it into, what do you say, a museum? Oh, my gosh. I thought that was pretty good. I think a lot of folks are tired of the weaponization of government. And is there no greater example of that than the FBI? The nation's top law enforcement agency shouldn't be that way. And I think what we need is to restore trust in the institution. And I believe Cash Patel is a person that could do that. He recognizes what's been going on the last few years, where they have become highly politicized as opposed to focusing on their job, which is to keep us safe. That's really what their primary function is, their mission is. And they've drifted away from that, like so much of government, because they've injected politics, and in particular, identity politics, into all aspects of management and policymaking in the swamp of agencies. And so Cash Patel comes in and says, you know, all these people just should not be in this one building, and they should be dispersed where they can actually do good and perform their function. So he said he wanted to turn the Hoover building into a museum. Man, I think that's a welcome, refreshing thought. And I think he said it would be a museum of the deep state, by the way, what Cash Patel said. Stephen Miller, who's also going to work again in the Trump administration, said Cash is a warrior, a patriot, a man of unquestioned integrity who will tirelessly defend our democracy and the abuse and corruption of the government's power and restore the faith and trust of Americans in the Bureau. I couldn't agree more. I think that's a good pick. And I now, you know, Rhino, is that something that requires, that doesn't require Senate advice and consent, does it? You know, I'm not really sure.
FBI director?
Yeah, does it?
I don't think so, no.
I don't think so either. So.
Now, there is some debate about the term for which you serve as the FBI director, and the current FBI director says, I've still got some years left.
Right.
But
exactly.
I believe, and again, if I'm not mistaken, it would be up to the will of the president for the current director to remain employed. And I don't believe President-elect Trump has any will to keep the current people in charge.
I think that's true. Of course, Christopher Wray, who served Trump, right, in the Trump administration in the last cycle, is presently at the helm of the FBI, and I think he's gone. Gone, gone, and gone is what I believe. But yeah, there's some question as to whether or not he can be replaced like that, given the contract that he's under to head the FBI and so forth. We shall see. I tell you what, Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk, wasting no time, are they, in identifying areas to cut costs? You've probably seen some interesting reports about this, some of the crazy stuff going on. What about the Roosevelt Hotel in New York City? Is this, you can't make this up, can you? It's owned by a Pakistani company, which is essentially the government. I mean, the way that country's structure exists. So let me get this straight. Help me out here, Rhino. New York City is going to house illegals in this building. There are 1,000 rooms in this rather massive hotel in New York City. And they're going to be paid $220 million for the hosting of illegals in this building, for their lodging, if you will. I mean, that's kind of a nice way to put it. But they're going to be housing them in this building, and it's owned by a government who honestly is not friendly to this country, is an adversary. So there's taxpayer money being used, as I understand it, to pay essentially the Pakistan government to house illegals. That is so twisted, honestly, it's kind of hard to track. But this is what happens.
I think we're going to see more and more of this as DOGE digs into the bureaucracy and the waste, fraud, and abuse stemming from the inefficiencies of the federal government. Because one perfect example of just how stupid the waste, fraud, and abuse is from the federal government. The federal government helped set up and helps fund the World Bank. If you're unfamiliar with the World Bank, it's probably because it's boring. It's
true.
A big old chunk of money from the developed countries of the world to fight poverty in the developing countries of the world.
Yep.
And they give out loans and grants for building of infrastructure such as roads and bridges and ports and all that kind of fun stuff. Real eye-opening, entertaining stuff to dig through. But one such developing country that takes advantage of these loans and grants from the World Bank is China. China remains, by definition, a developing country in the eyes of the World Bank because they continue to take the grants and the loans. Except there's one problem. They're double dipping because China also gets about half of all of the contracts that these other countries put out when they receive loans and grants from the World Bank.
Yeah.
So China gets to stay a developing country and have all the benefits of that, while also taking all the money from these countries that are getting money from the World Bank. And who's funding the World Bank? That's right, you are.
And so what's connected here is that the World Bank is bailing out Pakistan,
mm-hmm,
and enabled them to acquire this hotel. Mm-hmm. And now it's New York City taxpayers, by the way, are going to pay $220 million a year to Pakistan, which was bailed out by the World Bank, to which the United States is a major contributor. You can't make it up, honestly. You really can't. And it's as Vivek Ramaswamy described it, this is nuts. That's what he said in his social media post regarding it. Man. So here's another one that Doge pointed out. Now, this is not a federal matter, but it is a state matter, and that's just as important from a taxpayer perspective. And normally when you expose these kinds of situations, if you keep digging, you find there's some federal connection of funding as well. California High-Speed Rail Project, originally projected 16 years ago in 2008 to cost $33 billion, now projected to cost between $88 and $120 billion. It was supposed to be complete, ready for service in 2020. As of today, 4 years later, exactly zero passengers have been transported. And the majority of the thing is not even fully baked. It is not even fully designed.
It's worse than that. There is only one span that has been constructed.
One single span. They've received $6.8 billion in federal funds. They are requesting $8 billion more. No, that's what they call the old hard no, is it not? Unbelievable. Now, there is something that Elon Musk and Bernie Sanders agree on, and that's defense funding. They're both somewhat upset, rightfully so, that the Pentagon cannot pass for the seventh year in a row its audit. I can't even comprehend that, but they both say no more money until we get this thing at least fully accounted for at a minimum. We're coming right back. With half an hour left on midday, stay with us.
From the CB.
We are back in the Element Well studio. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's see, what else we got? Jason in Starkville says, have you ever had to work on a military base? I was called about replacing four vinyl tiles in a grocery store, and I charged them $600. Took all day long. Should have charged triple that. Took 45 days to get paid. 45 days actually is not that bad, I would say. I think in the state of Mississippi, 45 days is the law as far as when public sector entities have to pay their bills. And if not, the vendor can levy finance charges on them at 1.5% a month. And I think by state law, they have to pay it. So I recall from my business days, that was kind of the way it was. I found the state to be fairly prompt and reliable in payment because they wanted to avoid those finance charges. Normally in the private sector, if you were to add some finance charges to because someone's late on their bill, they have a balance that is extended beyond the agreed to terms, they just ain't going to pay it. You could chase them all day long, but they're not going to pay it. And there are no collections police, so to speak, that will go help you with that. But the state, because it's in statute, they actually will. They're obligated to do so by law. Interesting. Timmy McGee says, Gerard, I know there's a process on all cabinet nominees, but I truly think some of these Republican senators are afraid of what a new FBI director will find. Am I wrong? That's a good thought, a plausible thought there, Tim. I'm not sure, honestly, but I certainly would not underestimate Kash Patel's sort of impartiality. Right, I don't think he cares if someone has committed a crime, broken the law. He doesn't care if it's a U.S. senator and where their allegiance may lie. He's going after them. Now, what's a problem, of course, is what we've been witnessing where they start going after, oh, I don't know, like Catholics because of their pro-choice stance or they put parents on the watch list, right? Rhino, the Department of Justice, because they're showing up and raising hell at school board meetings because the school district is forcing gender ideological garbage down their throats and stuff like that. Yeah, so, oh, yeah, we got to put them on the terror watch list. Meanwhile, legitimate terrorists, well, we stick them in the Roosevelt Hotel, right? I mean, it's so upside down. But again, I think Americans spoke up. And we saw that with the outcome on November 5th, where you got it wrong there, FBI, and you're obviously stepping way outside of your boundary that Catholics, because of their pro-life position, are not really a threat to national security or the safety of American citizens. And certainly parents who express concerns to those in charge of the curricula in grade school, for example, even in kindergarten, they're not really a threat. These are people who are concerned about what you're thrusting on their children, this indoctrination of this radical gender and race ideologies. And people said, no, enough of that.
Also, pay no attention to the Afghan nationals that we brought over after the ridiculous pullout of Afghanistan that when they got tired of waiting on the army bases, they just left. And nobody knows where they are.
And are you seeing now?
Two of which were arrested before the election for trying to get together a plot to shoot up polling places.
Unbelievable. But yet, our resources and our funds are being invested in tracking parents who show up at school board meetings. They're concerned that they're telling kindergartners, oh, no, you're not a male or a female necessarily just because your parents said that. They didn't really know when they brought you home what your biological sex is, right? I mean, that's what they're teaching kindergartners.
Well, it goes back to our conversation earlier in the show about how far to the left has moved. It's really not that long ago in the grand scheme of things that the idea that a man could get pregnant would be considered laughable.
True.
But on the far left, that's normal. So they expect everyone else to accept it as normal.
That's exactly right.
When it is the farthest thing from normal.
And again, they force that garbage on young people at an impressionable age who just care about where the next good time's coming from. Just let them be kids.
And in the name of inclusivity, they lionize the fetishization of women by crazy men.
That is true. And
if it's offensive to wear a poncho and a big old mustache on Cinco de Mayo because of cultural appropriation, how in the world is it okay for a dude to put on gaudy makeup and a dress and call himself a woman?
It's sick, honestly. It's deranged, in my view. And it's when you start again thrusting your views, your crazy views like that on children. And I wonder, Rhino, if it's because they can't get clear-eyed adults to accept their craziness.
That's exactly what it is.
But a four-year-old, just by nature, is going to accept what an adult tells them in a classroom.
In the classroom, yes.
And so they use that as their platform, and they abuse it, honestly. That is, it's abuse, is what it is. And so, by the way, related to this, and you knew this was going to happen, the Supreme Court is going to hear the case, a case, that's made it all the way to the Supreme Court concerning gender transition procedures on minors. And this is related to the Tennessee law. That's what's being challenged. The Tennessee passed a law very similar to the law passed here in the state of Mississippi, which prohibits such procedures on minors. And so the Supreme Court is going to hear a case challenging the Tennessee law. This is going to be a big deal. This will likely be, I would argue, the highest profile case that the Supreme Court will hear in this term. And I'm not really sure where it's going to land. It's going to be closely watched. And so the argument that the plaintiffs are making, and by the way, the plaintiffs are the Biden administration, that the Tennessee law and similar state laws, such as Mississippi's, discriminate based on sex and transgender status and thus constitute a violation of the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause. That's what they're hanging their hat on. That's the thesis of their argument here.
Which, and using their logic, it would mean that it is against the 14th Amendment to have any laws in place for the sale of tobacco, the sale of alcohol, the sale of firearms. All those have age limits.
What about just physical abuse of a child? I mean, could you not make the case that this is physical abuse of a child's body? I'd say it is. You're destroying their body, essentially, with this nonsense.
I've said for the longest time, and I will reiterate it again, we will look back in the future on this era of trans surgeries for minors, or trans surgeries in general, until modern medicine catches up to the point where they can actually change your chromosomes. We will look back on this era the same way we look back on the era of lobotomies.
I think you're right.
As an era where modern medicine got out over their skis and allowed for a fad, for a trend, to override their better judgment.
Yeah. Well, these physical procedures, I would say, honestly, are just destroying, altering a child's body the way they do permanently. And in many cases, even if they decide at some point they want to detransition, there's all kinds of problems associated, medical problems, health problems associated with that. It's just incredible that this is even happening. But this is going to be a case heard by the Supreme Court. On the other side of the break, I got to pass on to you something that just happened in the state of Louisiana concerning taxes. Stay with us. We're coming right back with a final segment of Middays on this Monday.
Talk Mississippi.
All I can say is
We're back with you in the Element Well studio. New Hebrew Methodist Church says, isn't it sexual exploitation of a child when someone influences a child sexually? And that's the problem, is that I think people that are honest and objective and clear-eyed about this situation, this is completely inappropriate, and it is exploitative in nature. But there are people on the left that believe, oh, no, you're just allowing the child to understand and explore what they deem to be the reality of gender and sex, even from a biological perspective, and they disagree. They don't accept this idea that, you know, if you got, based on your chromosome makeup, that's what your gender is. That's what determines your gender, your sex. They basically say, no, it's however you identify. And they want you to know that. And so when you've got teachers telling young children, pay no attention to what the medical professionals and even your parents said about what your sex is. You're not just a boy or girl. You can be whatever you want. Yeah, that's... I think that's disgusting, and it's abusive, and that's so that's kind of what's going on here. But even further is when you start mutilating a perfectly healthy, normal young body because some child one day said that's a boy says, "Hey, I like Barbie dolls." Okay, they're 4 years old, but you've got people on the left that say we got to rush them down to the clinic right now, right, and start gender treatment. That's insane, and that's exactly what's happening. But even further, and what's more disgusting, and you've seen this, Rhino, is how the people that are all in on this ideology, they celebrate this crap. Like this is a good thing. No, it's not. It's not a good thing. Celebrate it. Hey, look, they want a transition. Let's have a party. It's unbelievable. That's why they got their butt beat. I just think that is counter to what the vast majority of this people in this country believe. Because it just defies reality and it defies logic, and more importantly, it's counter to their senses. It's what you see and hear and observe. And that doesn't lie. Your brain says, wait, that just ain't right. Now, we've talked about it before. You're an adult. You want to go mutilate your body? Knock yourself out. But don't push it on me. And don't suggest it because I may think you're crazy. I support your right to do it, by the way. I may think you're crazy, and I'm sure there's things about my life and our lives you think are crazy too. But when you start doing it to children, no, I got to draw the line there. So I said I'd share with you what's going on in Louisiana. Major tax reform passed in our state to the west last week. Special session called by the governor to get this done. And what they've done, what they've completed in this legislation is a reduction in the state personal and corporate income tax and the elimination of the franchise tax in the state of Louisiana. Individual income tax is going to be reduced to a flat rate of 3%. I find that curious because we have eliminated, we had three brackets. The 3% was eliminated several years ago. And then the 4% as part of the legislation passed a couple of years ago in the state. It was phased out that year. And then the 5%, the top bracket, is being phased out in increments over 3 years. We're in the midst of that right now. It will settle at 4%. So Louisiana's already gotten there, 3%. This will be the among the lowest in the country and the lowest in the south of states that have an income tax. Texas doesn't have one. Tennessee doesn't have one, as you know. And then they also enhanced the standard deduction for individuals, almost tripled. The exemption for senior citizens doubled. And those at lower income tax levels in the state of Louisiana, as a result of these changes, will pay no income tax at all. The corporate income tax, relatively high in Louisiana, currently at a tiered, it's a tiered system with a top rate of 7.5%. They're going to change that to just a flat 5.5%. That puts Louisiana kind of in the middle of the states that have a corporate income tax. But This is something a little nuanced. It's worth passing on. They're getting this done all in one fell swoop. And that's largely because they're offsetting those cuts with an increase in the state's sales tax. Current rate at the state level, 4.45%. That was scheduled to go down to 4% at the end of the current fiscal year. This legislation in reducing the corporate and individual income taxes will increase it to 5%, so a total of 0.55% at the state level. Keep in mind, however, folks, though, unlike Mississippi, which has a 7% state sales tax, in Louisiana, virtually every parish and city layer on their taxes. They actually have a higher average sales tax than we do in Mississippi when you combine all three layers. We are out of time here today. Back with you again tomorrow. Until then, stay safe and God bless everyone.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.